H E A A D I A R R H E.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is April 24th, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Diarrhea. Hard to spell, easy to smell, and easy to cause with IV antibiotics. Our guest skeptic today is Megan Groth. You may know her as EM Farm Girl on Twitter. Megan is the emergency medicine pharmacist specialist at the University of Vermont Medical Center and an adjunct professor of pharmacy at the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. Welcome back to the SGEM, Megan.
Thanks for having me back, Ken. I love making time to be on the SGEM.
Oh, things I like to hear. But you have started a trend on the SGEM. We've had a number of EM pharmacists being guest skeptics, including Billy Sin, who did the SGEM hop recently, and of course, Nadia Awad, who was talking about sex. Well, not about sex, but about sexually transmitted infection.
I think it's so cool having a multidisciplinary team talking about recent literature on the SGEM.
Well, you know what? I'm starting to think that, you know, we've always wanted to cut that KT window down from 10 years down to 1 year so that people could have the best possible emergency care. But emergency care takes a team. And I'm sort of reorienting my thinking here, saying that best care should start from the moment people reach out and dial 911 in our situation, from the very start until they're discharged from hospital. So I'm thinking this is like alpha to omega, ambulance to out of the hospital. What do you think?
I think it sounds great.
Well, now, you know, all we need to do, because we've had such excellent EM pharmacists, is to see if we can strong arm that alien pharmacist, not alien, alien, academic life and emergency medicine pharmacist, Brian Hayes, and get him on the SGEM.
You know, I thought I might help you to do that today, Ken, by talking about an article that Brian recently highlighted on Alium as one of the top pharmacotherapy articles of 2014.
Oh, so that's the article you picked. Perfect. Excellent. Maybe this way we'll get him on the show eventually. But you're keeping well. I understand you've got a trip planned for this weekend. You're heading up to Montreal?
Yeah, going to cross the border, maybe eat some poutine.
Oh, very good, eh? You're going to be cross-boarding shopping because that American dollar is doing so great these days.
I know. I thought I'd take advantage of it.
Well, take advantage of us Canadians. But can you start us off with a case today?
Sounds good. So a 58-year-old male presents to your ED complaining of a warm, painful, reddened area on his left thigh. His past medical history is only significant for generalized anxiety disorder, and he has no known drug allergies. On exam, you find no evidence of an abscess, and you find his labs and vital signs within normal limits. You confidently give him a diagnosis of uncomplicated cellulitis and need to determine an antibiotic regimen. You'd like to send him home with a 5-day course of cephalexin, but are thinking about giving him an IV dose of cefazolin before he leaves.
How about some background, though, on this whole use of IV antibiotics?
So in certain infectious disease conditions, such as meningitis or septic shock, we know that rapid administration of antimicrobials in adequate doses is associated with improvement in patient outcomes.
And septic shock, this is one of those time-dependent emergencies. It's been demonstrated that for every hour, that's right, every 1 hour in delay of providing intravenous antibiotics to patients with septic shock, mortality actually increases by almost 8%.
But Ken, in patients who are well enough to be discharged home, this same relationship hasn't been demonstrated.
And we all know that antibiotic-associated diarrhea is a common side effect of antibiotic therapy. And the incidence in the literature has, oh, I should say that, the literature has been reported to be somewhere between 5% and as high as 39%. So this can be as low as 1 in 20 or even as high as more than 1 in 3.
So one of the most concerning types of antibiotic-associated diarrhea is Clostridium difficile infection. This has been on the increase lately.
Yeah, and there's such a concern about C. diff that it's been one of the patient safety quality indicators in many organizations and jurisdictions. And in fact, in my own hospital, we have to report this as a quality metric.
So there have been a number of factors that increase the risk of antibiotic-associated diarrhea or C. diff infection, including the type of antibiotic prescribed and the duration of use. While almost all antibiotics can cause diarrhea and C. diff infection, the cephalosporins, broad-spectrum penicillins, and clindamycin are more often the cause.
Yeah, and there's also some patient factors, Megan, that are thought to be involved. And this includes if you're older than 65, you have comorbidities, or you actually already have a history of antibiotic-associated diarrhea. But what's the clinical question, Megan, that we're going to try to answer on today's episode of the SGEM?
Today we're going to try to answer, what is the risk of getting antibiotic-associated diarrhea with an IV dose of antibiotics prior to discharging patients home with an oral course?
And what is one of these top 10 references that Brian Hayes suggested we know?
So the crappy paper that
crappy paper. Nicely played, Megan, nicely played.
So the paper that Brian picked is by Herron et al. Factors influencing the development of antibiotic-associated diarrhea in ED patients discharged home. Risk of administering IV antibiotics. It's from the American Journal of Emergency Medicine in 2014.
Time to do the PICO. What's the population?
So they were looking at adult patients from three emergency departments. Two of these emergency departments were in large urban centers, and there was one small community site.
And they excluded patients if they had diarrhea or C. diff in the previous 4 weeks, had received an antibiotic in the previous 4 weeks, or were admitted to the hospital. But what was the intervention then?
So they looked at patients who received IV antibiotics as part of their emergency department visit and discharged home with a new prescription for antibiotics.
And they compared it to what?
They compared it to patients who were not given IV antibiotics in their ED visit and were still discharged home with a new prescription for oral antibiotics.
And what were their outcomes, their primary outcome, and if they had any secondary outcomes?
So the primary outcome they evaluated was the development of antibiotic-associated diarrhea. The authors defined this as three or more loose stools per day for at least 2 days. The secondary outcome was the development of C. diff infection, which the authors defined as antibiotic-associated diarrhea that led to a diagnosis of C. diff infection confirmed by a positive C. diff toxin A assay.
And so the authors' conclusions were, quote, intravenous antibiotic therapy administered to emergency department patients before discharge was associated with higher rates of antibiotic-associated diarrhea and with 2 cases of Clostridium difficile infections. Care should be taken when deciding to use broad-spectrum intravenous antibiotics to treat emergency department patients before discharge home. End of quote. Well, Megan, we have 11 quality checklist questions for observational trials. Let's go through those now. Question number 1, did the study address a clearly focused question?
Yes.
And did the authors use appropriate methods to answer this question?
Yes, they did, if they were looking for association, not causation.
And was the cohort recruited in an acceptable way?
Yes.
And was the exposure accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes.
How about the outcome? Was it accurately measured to minimize bias?
I'm unsure about this one, Ken.
Okay, question number 6. Have the authors identified all important confounding factors?
No, and I'll mention this later in the commentary section.
Okay, number 7. Was the follow-up of subjects complete enough?
Yes, I think so.
And how precise are those results in estimating the risk?
Only moderately precise.
Do you believe the results?
Yes, I do.
And do you think the results could be applied to your local population?
Yes, I do.
And the 11th and final question, do the results of this study fit with other available evidence?
Yes.
Well, then let's go through the key results, Megan.
All right. So the authors of this study were able to complete analysis on 247 patients. Most of these patients were generally healthy with no significant past medical history.
And the most common infection being treated with antibiotics was skin and soft tissue infections. The patients who received IV or oral-only antibiotics were similar at baseline with respect to emergency severity index, the percent that had tachycardia or were febrile, and their medical histories.
So for the primary outcome of antibiotic-associated diarrhea, they found it happened in 45 of the 247 patients, or 18%. That fits right in the window of the 5 to 39% incidence that was previously mentioned. There was an odds ratio here of 2.73, with a 95% confidence interval of 1.38 to 5.43.
So about 26% of the IV group versus about 12% of the oral group got diarrhea. The absolute difference between the two was about 13%, which gave a number needed to harm or to cause diarrhea of 7.
And for their secondary outcome of C. diff infection, there were two of the 247 patients, or 1%, that experienced an episode of C. diff. Both of these patients received IV antibiotics.
And the rate of antibiotic-associated diarrhea tended to increase with the duration of antibiotic therapy. And then when you looked at what type of antibiotics these patients received, clindamycin, vancomycin, cephalosporins, penicillins, and macrolides were associated with the highest rates of antibiotic-associated diarrhea, whereas quinolones and doxycycline had the lowest rates.
I think it's important to mention that patients who experienced antibiotic-associated diarrhea, that can have some serious consequences. Of those patients, 28% stopped taking the antibiotic, and about 16% had a subsequent healthcare visit to address the diarrhea symptoms.
Well, that finishes up the results, so it's time to talk a little nerdy. In this small observational trial, the authors sought to determine risk factors for the development of antibiotic-associated diarrhea. The authors found that about 18% of patients in their analysis developed antibiotic-associated diarrhea, which you mentioned fits into that range of about 5% up to 39% previously described in the literature.
The primary outcome here was patient-oriented, but they didn't necessarily take into account all potential confounders. It would have been nice to see a description of whether or not patients had any history of constipation or were taking any medications that could have affected GI motility or the development of diarrhea or constipation, such as any sort of bowel regimen, any iron supplements, opioids, naltrexone, metoclopramide, erythromycin, and the list goes on.
Additionally, it's unclear if this primary outcome was accurately measured to minimize bias because of how this data was actually collected. Patients were contacted in a follow-up survey 4 weeks after finishing the antibiotic therapy, and they were asked, hey, did you develop antibiotic-associated diarrhea? This is subject to not only recall bias, but may be different depending on the patient's perceptions of what a, quote, normal bowel movements are.
Emergency Severity Index is endorsed by the American College of Emergency Physicians and the Emergency Nurses Association in the U.S., and is used widely outside of the U.S. as well. It's been shown to have an acceptable level of reliability, but may be subject to some variability in certain patient populations, such as pediatrics, and a greater degree of variability observed in levels 3 through 5.
The tool does have limitations as it relates to describing the patients in this study, but it does represent the most feasible and widely recognized tool available for this population.
Despite its limitations, this study does provide important information about potential risks of an intervention that has yet to demonstrate any benefit in this patient population, such as those well enough to go home with a course of oral antibiotics for their infection.
And additionally, if patients who receive IV antibiotics are more likely to develop antibiotic-associated diarrhea, and 28% of those patients stop taking the antibiotic early due to the side effects, this could have implications not only for the patients, but also for the eventual development of antimicrobial resistance.
So if IV antibiotics don't result in a treatment benefit for these patients, are potentially harmful, and have greater cost implications, then why haven't we abandoned this practice, Ken?
Why haven't we? You know what we really need? We need a double-blinded, randomized, placebo-controlled trial of patients being treated for infections in the emergency department and discharged home. The patients could receive IV antibiotics or a saline placebo and all be discharged home on new oral antibiotic prescriptions. And then you could follow them up for that primary outcome of antibiotic-associated diarrhea and have those secondary outcomes of C. diff infections, discontinuation rates, and clinical cure. So if you're out there and you're looking for a research project, here you go. We've just handed you one. All right, Megan, let's comment on our conclusions and compare them to the author's conclusions.
So, Ken, we agree that there was an association between IV antibiotic administration in the ED and increased rates of antibiotic-associated diarrhea.
Physicians should always think about the potential harm before providing any treatment. But what's the bottom line, Megan? What's the take-home message?
Administration of IV antibiotics in the emergency department is not without harms. In this small observational study, it looks like IV antibiotics are associated with an increased risk of antibiotic-associated diarrhea.
So can you resolve that case that you presented at the start of the podcast?
Sure. So you decide to skip the IV dose of cefazolin and discharge your patient with a 5-day course of cefalexin for his cellulitis.
And you give the standard advice to return to the emergency department if they're getting worse. You know, their cellulitis is getting worse. So they're developing a fever and or increased pain, redness. And in addition to that, if they're not able to tolerate the oral antibiotics or they're otherwise worried. So how are you going to take this paper that Brian Hayes said we should know about and apply it clinically?
So Ken, for patients well enough to go home and with a working gut, an IV dose of antibiotics in the ED does not have a benefit over oral therapy and may pose an increased risk of adverse effects.
So Megan, here's what I'm going to tell patients. We're going to start you on some antibiotics for your infection. Here's a prescription for some pills, and these are easily absorbed into your system and highly effective. One of the most common side effects of antibiotics is diarrhea. Giving you an intravenous dose of antibiotics before you leave could put you at higher risk of developing diarrhea. Additionally, intravenous antibiotics for this type of infection do not result in a faster cure. So please take all your antibiotics as prescribed, and this will ensure your best chance of being cured of this infection. Well, that sound reminds me it's time for the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Tyler Gumbash from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Tyler knew that Murray et al. Published the first study on preconditioning ischemia to protect ischemic myocardium, and the paper was called Preconditioning with Ischemia, a Delay of Lethal Cell Injury in Ischemic Myocardium, and it was published in Circulation 1986. You probably weren't even born then, Megan.
I was.
Megan, what is the Keener contest this week?
All right, Ken. So what commonly used drug for the treatment of Clostridium difficile infection is not actually FDA approved for this indication?
Ooh, you mean we're using something off-label? It's not been FDA approved? Well, if you know the answer to Megan's Keener question, then send me an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, I'm just going to mention three conferences that I'm going to be at. The Emergency Medicine and Acute Care Conference in Hilton Head, May 13th to 16th. And then I'm going to be lighting the way at the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians meeting in Edmonton, May 30th to June 3rd. And then, Megan, you know what? We have SMAC, Social Media and Critical Care in Chicago. I just like doing that, Megan. SMAC. June 23rd to 26th. You're going to be there, aren't you?
I am going to be there. I'm trying to get my miles in for the Smack Run group.
Oh, get your kilometers in and we will go for a run.
It's in Chicago. We go by miles.
Oh, but they're so much longer than kilometers. Well, it's wonderful to have such a talented and enthusiastic EM pharmacist like you back on the SGEM.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
Now, do you know of any more papers that you might like to put our skeptical eye upon, or are we going to just reach out to Brian again?
Well, you're welcome to reach out to Brian. I definitely have some more papers in mind, but I don't want to spoil anything.
Ooh, don't tease him now. Okay, well, you have a très bien trip up in Montreal this weekend, eh? Before you go, can you give us the SGEM tagline?
I will, but I can't do it in a French accent.
How about a New England accent?
All right. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.
Diarrhea is hard to spell, but it's very easy to smell.